Hello and welcome to Sports Community Podcast, produced in the studios of RPPFM 98.7, 98.3 FM on your dial, the voice of the peninsula. My name is Jonah Vella, and along with my co-host Steve Pallas, we'll bring you the latest news and information from the world of grassroots sport so you can help your club succeed. And we've got an absolute belter of a show today. We've got one of the legends of the local community here on the Mornington Peninsula. His name is Michael Diverston, a long-time resident of these parts. He's been involved in grassroots sport ever since he was a wee lad, running around playing cricket and footy here on the beautiful Mornington Peninsula. He's now the proud father of three daughters who also are playing local sport and participating in life-saving and a few other activities here on the beautiful Mornington Peninsula. But he's here in the studio today to talk to us about his personal journey, which is an amazing story of him travelling to the US to watch his beloved Giants play in the World Series of Baseball. And on the surface, it seems just like another sporting story, but there is so much more to this one here, and it really goes a long way to showing us the true value of sport and how it can help us with our everyday challenges and provide us with moments of joy and inspiration unlike anything else. So without further ado, allow me to introduce the man himself, Michael Diverston. Welcome to the show. Hey, or Mick. How do you prefer to be called, mate?
Hey, you normally. Mick's good, mate.
Mick's good. Yep. Now, mate, I want to chat to you about a recent event in your life, which is absolutely mammoth. I think that our listeners will get a lot out of you telling the story. And it involves you going to the World Series last year. And I'm not talking the World Series, darts or anything like that. I'm talking the World Series baseball, which is an amazing thing. So I just, I wonder, mate, if you could just tell us how this all came about, because it is like there'd be a lot of people out there that would have this dream as well.
Yeah, well, I suppose for me it's been a dream for a long time, 20 years. And it came about in really bizarre circumstances. I desperately wanted to go in 2002 when the Giants made it. And then in 2010 and in 2012. And each time I sort of got to that point where we made the World Series, and I would look at flights and I'd look at tickets on StubHub and I'd think, I wonder how I could make this work. And every time I was...
You are a serious fan, right? You follow it. So
I'm a wine sales rep, and hopefully this is never heard by my boss, but I get in the car in the morning and my radio is tuned to KMBR, which is the local sports station in San Francisco. And I will listen to that all day, including the pre-match and post-match of every baseball game. So from February to the end of October, hopefully, I listen to baseball and baseball talk all day. I love it. So it's just part of what I do. Every time I get in the car, it's like when you're a kid, you used to get in and out of the car with your mum and dad, you'd listen to the cricket, yeah, and you'd be able to pick up where the game was at straight away.
I know this. Look, we may go off and on course here. It's probably we definitely will. I'm just interested in how did you get such a love of this sport? Because it's fair to say, I know it's played in Japan and Cuba and but it is, most people would recognise it as an American sport.
Yep. I travelled to the States in 1994 with a friend who'd come over and done exchange here in Australia. He lived in the Bay Area, down in Mountain View, which is about an hour out of San Francisco. That area has a massive culture of baseball, really huge. And he was all over the Giants, loved them, and took me down to see a whole series of games against the Phillies, and we ended up spending most of the summer down there. We went to about 12 different games over different periods, and we'd listen to the game on the radio, and I started to get into it, and I loved it. Of course, coming back to Australia in 1994, after a few months over there, there's no access to the sport here. So from a major league perspective,
was there an Australian baseball league at that time? Or
there was, yeah. So we went out to Waverley a few times to see the Reds, but it just wasn't quite the same. And then when MLB, I used to follow it on the internet, you know, you used to have the ticker tape updates. Like 2002 was just sitting at a computer desk watching the updates every 30 seconds, waiting to see whether, you know, JT Snow had got a hit or what was happening. And then as it progressed with the technology, it just became more and more accessible. And now you can stream it on your phone, and
well, you know,
the apps are fantastic.
As you said, you're listening in, you're getting to your car here on the peninsula here in Melbourne, Victoria, Australia, and you're listening to the game in San Francisco.
So game time starts either 7 a.m. If it's on the East Coast, it'll start at 4 a.m. most times. Or if it's a late night game in San Francisco, it's starting at 11 o'clock in the morning. It's perfect. You can listen to the pregame.
And you're listening to all of those.
The whole game and the postgame, and your wife doesn't even know.
What about, because baseball is surround. One of the great things that baseball does is it chronicles its history. And the storytellers in baseball and the myth makers are of an exceptional level. So do you get into the mythology of it?
There's a classic old book called Fireside Baseball Stories, which is really, and it's all that chronicle history.
Yeah, Shoeless Joe Jackson and
Willie Mays and
Willie Mays, and
they do keep a really close eye on their history and their traditions of their sport. I think they do it better than anybody.
Yes, and even with the films, you know, the Natural and the one with the field in the corn.
Well, and if you're a documentary person, Ken Burns' documentary is possibly one of the best documentaries ever put together.
Right.
Which is an 11, I think it's 11 hours it goes for. It's a 10-part series.
Tell me you haven't watched all of them.
Yeah. Don't ask me how many times.
Oh, wow. So you've got this incredibly deep love for this sport.
I do.
And you've managed to go to the World Series. How did this happen? I mean, you're a father of three?
Father of three.
Three young girls.
Eah. 3, 11, and 9.
It'd be fair to say that it would take quite a substantial financial commitment to do something along those lines.
Well, the last time I saw a game was in 94, live. Then I went, opening day in Sydney this year, I went to both games. We did a road trip and went up there. So apart from those two instances, I haven't been to a live game.
Right.
I've listened to plenty. I just haven't been to the games. I've gone to the Melbourne games a lot.
Remind me to ask you about the listening experience v the watching experience. I know it was the World Series it went to, so it's not your average game. But so you've gone to a few games. How did this come about? What happened to make you decide? And I have to say, I was there for part of this, so it's an amazing story. But what clicked in your brain to say, right, I'm going to stop my job and go?
Well, I pretty much stop my job most days for baseball. Anyway. Hunter Pence made a really good speech at the end of the 162nd game at home.
So who's this fella?
He's our spiritual leader in some ways. Okay, so this is Hunter Pence. He plays right field for the Giants. And he grabbed the microphone after the last game and he just said, they had this thing called the Yes Movement, which was a follow-up from the WWE, the wrestling, where this guy walks around and he just pumps his fingers in the air and just says, yes, 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 and gets the crowd shouting yes. And it's all about having that belief in yourself. And Hunter Pence made a speech about, at the start of the year, we thought we were good enough to win the World Series. And all the way through the year, we've believed that. You guys have believed it. And they were leading by 9 games, then they fell back behind by 4 games. So it's a journey, the whole season, 162 games. It's a long journey.
It got
to the last week and they battled to get the wild card.
Was there a time there where some bloke who hadn't played, he came out and he hit the winning run?
Yeah, so they did have that period where it looked like they weren't going to make it at all after looking like they would win the division. They got in on a wild card. And he made this speech about, we still believe, and he made a comment about, I know you're sitting in your car shouting and screaming when we get that hit. And that's me. That's what I do. Like, I'll be driving around the city of Melbourne, and people will look at my car, and I'm fist pumping when Posey gets a hit. I'm just into it. I love it, right? So I get very involved in the game. And he makes that speech, and I'm thinking, that's me. God damn it. I want to be there.
This bloke is talking to me. Yeah, he's talking to me. He's direct line to me.
I want to be there. So through the whole postseason, it's a journey. First, it's a one-game wild card playoff. Then they're in a five-game series, and then a seven-game series for the divisional title, for the National League title, and then the World Series, which is seven as well. When we won against St. Louis and got into the World Series, I went, I've just got to find a way. It's happened so many times before. Up until 2010, it had been over 40 years. It might never happen again. This is the moment. I want to take the chance. So the conversation when I got home was, how do I do it? When I goes, you don't do it. You've got three kids.
Who said that?
My wife, Renee, said, no, you're not going. That's ridiculous. Calm down. Get off that website.
Which you could is understandable.
That's completely logical.
Yeah, logical. Yeah. That's the one. That's the word.
So you might have guessed by now that I'm not a logical person sometimes.
No, I'm more of an emotive person, and I've known you for a while. That's not the word that would come to my mind describing
you. So I said, what if you can't, being a salesperson, no's not the answer. It's just that's not possible because it's going to cost too much money. What if I could do it and it didn't cost money? Oh, yeah, how are you going to do that? I said, well, look, I think it'll cost $5,000. Flights, I'll stay in a cheap backpacker. I'll get tickets for $600 to $700 each per game. A bit of spending money here and there, flights. It's about $5,000.
But I don't get – tickets for those things must be like hen's teeth. So how did you go
there? They have the best organised secondary market for sports tickets in the States. There's no scalping because the secondary market's there for the buyer that already has the tickets.
Right, so they don't frown on that. They
encourage it and it's controlled. So StubHub, they get a percentage of the sales of the tickets. And then – so if you've got a season's ticket – like the face value of my tickets was $350. I paid double that for each ticket.
Wow.
And that's just goes back to market forces. The tickets are there if you want them and you're prepared to pay.
Yep.
And I bought before I left. If I had bought the day of the games, I would have paid double what I paid. Because the closer it gets to the game, the more emotive it gets and people just go, oh, screw it.
So was that your first – did you get the tickets first before you started thinking about raising the finances or
– No. Well, I looked at the tickets and I'd sort of worked out where I could stay, how I would get there, flights, accommodation, and I kind of worked out, oh, it's going to cost this, that'd cost this, sort of put a sum together and then went, okay, I've got to find $5,000 in 48 hours because within 48 hours the tickets would have gone up. The flights would have gone, and I needed to leave by the Wednesday to get there in time for the first game. So
that's crazy. I can't wait for the rest of this story.
So that's the start of the story. The background of the story is that, from a personal perspective, I had a really challenging 6 month period where my wife's been battling some depression and mental health issues, and during that time, I've written a lot. It's been my cathartic sort of release, is to write stuff down. So I started talking to people like yourself going, how do I do it? What am I going to do to get there? And my first thought was, I'm a decent writer. Maybe I can contact all the newspapers. So I spoke to journalists, newspapers. No hope of getting them to help fund me to go to the World Series. They could clearly see that, you know, there would be some value in it for them, but whether there was a market big enough in Australia for it, they questioned it.
So, right, yeah. Yeah, that would have been the main concern, yeah.
Yeah, so and the idea just kept developing. I was thinking about it constantly. All right, there's got to be a way. I've just got to find the way. rather than say, no, I can't do it. Just work out the way to get it done. So my next port of call was that I could write a book about the actual trip, okay? And then the further I got into doing that idea, I thought, this has got good value for a baseball fan, but the stuff that I've written about over the last 6 months, that's the stuff that's powerful. And part of the reason why I wanted to go was because that's been part of the community that I've been attached to. So I spend all that time listening to baseball in the car. I also spend time on Twitter conversing with people directly at the games. Twitter opened up the world of baseball in a huge manner for San Francisco people because it meant people could talk during the game, even if you're sitting on your own.
So you felt a sense of belonging to this community.
Absolutely.
Yeah, right.
You know, I have to hide the bills every now and then, but sometimes I'll ring the talkback stations and I'll speak to Marty Laurie.
Are you nuts?
Well, it costs a bit, but you got no idea. These guys are fantastic. Their baseball knowledge is phenomenal. So you feel a part of that. When you do something like that, you get on the phone and you ring this guy and he'll talk to you for 20 minutes.
Wow.
Oh, you're ringing from Australia. Whereabouts in Australia? Are you anywhere near Andrew Bogut's house? So yeah, look, it's from that perspective, I always felt like I was part of the supporter group. And when my wife got really ill and she spent some time in hospital, the thing that kept me going was baseball. The one constant that was the escape, that was there every day, that didn't fail me, was baseball. Mm. Whether we won or we lost, it didn't really matter. It was just the fact that I could find that zone and that meditative source of freedom and lose yourself in the game.
And you also probably felt you supported.
Yeah. So for me, then when I really started assessing why I listen to baseball so much and why is it that you want to travel all that way for three games of baseball when you haven't been to a game for 20 years, what is it you're actually trying to do? And for me, it came back to a point of, well, I want to connect with that community, and that community's got me through, and it's almost like it was part of the journey that I had to take as a person as well as a fan. I mean, we all want to do it as a fan, but for me it was about, okay, this is more now about our personal journey from battling mental health, operating as a carer rather than as a husband for the last 6 months, and then understanding that the value of the trip wasn't just so much with the baseball, but it was a release form for me on connecting with that community.
And was it a way in to say thanks or to pay a little bit of respect to them for what they've done for, you know, what the game has done for you? And
I don't know who you thank. I mean, I met guys there that I'd...
But you don't have to thank anyone. Just the process of going over there in your mind, because of what the game's, you know, you felt this was a good thing to do. You know,
well for me, through the process of as a carer for a person with some serious mental health issues, I learned a lot about meditation, and I learned a lot about why I connect so heavily with the baseball. And the fact that what you do with meditation is you try and focus your mind in that single moment that you're in. When you listen to a game, the reason we all love sport is because the only thing we think about when it's happening is that moment in the sporting arena. That's the reason why we love to play sport, and that's the reason why we get attached to watching it. And meditation isn't the answer to everything, but I was able to connect back and say, okay, the way that I watch and listen to baseball all the time is my source of meditation, but it's not true meditation. True meditation is being able to access that ability to slow your thought processes down and actually assess how you're feeling, and then being able to rather than react to a situation, respond to it. So the things that I used to do where getting off the course, but with so the critical moment in the book for me is that I had a game where Romo blew a save. This will mean nothing to you, Joe, but he blew a save in the ninth.
Sadly, it does mean something to me because knowing you, you've subjected me to a lot of NFL and whatnot. So I know Romo.
Okay, so Romo blows a save in the ninth, and I was fuming, and then I'm driving past this little old lady who's parked, double parked outside the lines in Wardialic, and a parking inspector's trying to book her. I was fuming. I'm like, damn, Romo. I jumped out of the car and I yelled at the parking inspector, I'm leave her alone. I was screaming and swearing at him. And the parking inspector shit himself. He jumped in his car and he drove off.
Oh, really?
And the little old lady's like, oh, thank you. And then all the people sitting in the cafes are looking at me like I'm the greatest psycho on the planet. And I probably was.
And all because Romo blew a save.
And you were completely reacting to the emotions and the way you're feeling rather than responding to it and processing it properly. You know, and for me, that was the cornerstone because we come back to and this is getting a little bit off course from sport and baseball, but that connection of when you're in a position and you're a carer or you're battling health issues from a mental perspective, your ability to slow your mind down and then react or respond, when you start responding to things and you're processing things slower, things are starting to get better. And it's a challenge. No one can do it all the time.
I think I'm better
for it, and I don't think I would have made that connection without baseball.
Yeah, I don't think it's away from the sport at all. I think the sport has given you the strength to do that. And the reason we were so keen for you to come on the show is because your story is one of the most powerful examples that I know. I mean, I've talked to a lot of passionate fans, different sports, but you are an exception, my friend. And yours is one of the most powerful examples I know of a way that sport can connect with an individual for the positive. Yeah. Because not only have you got sheer enjoyment out of being in the moment and enjoying the game and the heights to which the game pushes the people that play it and all the intrigue and whatnot, but you've also been part of the way that sport can lift you to a better place, and that's one of the great things about sport. You know, it's one of the reasons that sport is not just for people who play it, but volunteers who are part of clubs and who watch, who get lifted and are transcended to places that make them better and feel better. I mean, yours is a very potent example of that aspect of sport in our life.
Yeah, well, sometimes I look back at it and I think it was so much about the baseball, but a lot of it wasn't about the baseball.
Mm.
A lot of it was about that community, that cathartic release for that mental health, and the connection of all three together. So I had the desire from the fact that I love the sport, and the writing, which I've also always loved. And the key for me with the writing, someone said to me, as long as you write something that you're passionate about and it's truthful to 100%, people will love it and they'll read it.
Yep.
So when I put forward the idea of how am I going to raise $5,000, for me the connection was I'm going to be as honest as I can within lines of there's some things I don't want to talk about in the book because of the kids.
Mm.
But outside of the kids, I want to be as truthful and honest as I can about our journey and how baseball intertwines with that and how I've got to the World Series. So I pitched the idea on Facebook and basically crowdfunded it and said, I need $5,000 in 48 hours. I'm going to write a book. This is why. This is what it's going to be about. Anyone who wants to pre-buy a copy, let me know. And it just went viral to a degree. And I had people and friends going, oh, wow, I think I can help you. I know so-and-so. And I got connections all over the place. And then all of a sudden I had one benefactor in particular and friend who donated a large amount of the money. I was very lucky. Inside the 48 hours, I raised the money.
Jeepers. So, that's amazing.
Well, it was almost surreal. I'm sitting at the airport 4 days later pinching myself going,
do you know, I can't wait till you write this book. I honestly can't. And you've got a Hall of Famer, sitting baseball player, sitting next to you in the studio who we will introduce and have on the show. Hall of Famer, no less. And I'm sure she would be pretty keen to read the book as well. So, I'm just really passionate about getting this book out of you, so I might have distracted you there, what you were saying.
I can't remember where we were.
So you got the money and you were ready to go. You had your tickets, you got your money.
Yeah. So part of making the trip viable is then, A, getting the material for the book. So spending a lot of time writing. The City Lights bookstore, have you ever heard of it? Legendary spot in San Francisco. Yes. We're all the artists and the...
Is that in the Haight-Ashbury district?
No, it's down on the other side on the... it's just down past Chinatown.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, so it's on the other side as you head down towards...
The wharf.
To Pier 39.
Yeah.
It's a legendary bookstore. And the owner was actually a massive baseball fan too. So he was intertwined with the Giants baseball as well, right when Willie Mays and the Hispanic movement was really taking over the baseball in the Bay Area. So it was a good place to go and ride each day. It was really, it had that history about it. And it was a fantastic place, a great coffee shop over the road. I could sit in there on my iPad and just type away.
How many espressos?
I had more beers than I had espressos. I had copious amounts of both.
Okay, we'll leave that one.
So it was a great trip, and it was it gave me the ability to also spend time writing away from home, but also gave me the ability to go out and meet people in a way that I haven't done since I was 20. You, as a couple, you might travel, and I don't think you talk as freely with people as you would if you're on your own.
Right.
Or travel in the same completely irrational fly-by-the-seat-of-your-pants motion as I do.
Yep.
So normally my wife and kids keep me in check. With no one to keep me in check on my own, I pretty much just didn't sleep for 4 days and went and met people and talked to fans all over the place and had an absolute blast. You know, I really talked to a lot of people about why they love the Giants or their connection with the Giants and what they were doing in the community, and everyone from bartenders to CEOs to street people. It was just an amazing exploratory trip where I just got the opportunity to speak to some fantastic people. So.
Wow. I actually can see, you know, there's a movie out, probably more at the moment, probably more, to be fair, aimed at the women, the world, called The Wild. I can actually see your story being a movie as well, because not only the book, but it's an incredible journey of discovery. It's not just the sport, but you know, it's just amazing journey. How did your family cope when you were over there? Did you have much? You know, did you basically just put the phone down?
No, I didn't. I still had because in the morning here is afternoon over there, so my hangover would be gone by then. So I could always Skype and be in pretty good fashion Nick, by the time the kids picked up at the other end. So I'd call once a day.
Yeah.
Yeah. The beauty of San Francisco is there's Wi-Fi everywhere. So as long as you had a data card to get basic Wi-Fi connections, I could data call everybody via Skype. So communication was really easy. The stadium has free Wi-Fi on all the time, and it was just a nice place to be too. So I kind of just sometimes during the day, I just sat around near the stadium and talked to people, and I could Skype from the stadium or off the wharf, or it's very easy.
Mm. So I'm really interested in exploring that connection with the sport a little bit further. Now, I know that you're a mad, passionate Bomber supporter for people interstate. That's the Essendon Football Club here, which just so happens to be embroiled in a bit of a supplement scandal at the moment, but we won't go into that because I know that drives Essendon supporters crazy. How do you compare following the football club here in Australia with your journey following the Giants baseball? Is there a difference?
Yeah, there is and there isn't. It's still tribal. The thing that I fell out of love with AFL. I went to 20 consecutive grand finals.
Wow.
Been an AFL member. During the years when we didn't have kids, I went to 40 games a year. 40 games of footy a year. Not just Essendon. If Kerry was playing on a Friday night or Ablett was playing or Lock, I'd just go and watch good footballers. Because it was close and it was great and really enjoyed the sport. I think around about 2006, 2007, when the game changed the way it was played and the pace changed and it became a really different form of the sport, I started to lose interest. Maybe the kids helped too. You know, with the kids getting older, you kind of go in less, but I just grew less and less passionate about it because I couldn't – it wasn't the sport that I grew up with.
Mm.
When you're going to the Giants Stadium, on the inside of the wall, there's a – just above the entrance to the members, it says, I believe in the Rip Van Winkle theory that a man could fall asleep for 70 years, walk into a baseball stadium and understand the game intimately as if he was the day before he fell asleep. The game fundamentally hasn't changed.
So it hasn't changed since
there's been small changes, but it's still...
Pitcher, batter, fieldsman.
Yeah, the bases haven't changed, distance. Yeah. The ball hasn't changed. The batting technology, like the technology of the bats probably has improved a bit, but essentially it's still the same game.
Hmm.
So the AFL, I think by removing the bump, by dialing back different things, really moved away from their own traditions. And the game morphed and developed into a very different game. And I go to a game of football now and I don't understand what decisions are made. And I grew up with the sport, played it, loved it. And now I look at it and go, I just don't understand what's happening.
Mm. And what about the relationship to the club? Do you find that the club is using social media and those kind of things to engender that kind of... I'm looking at what can we learn from your experience and your love of the Giants here in the Australian landscape to try and imbue that kind of passion and sense of belonging with our fans here?
I think 3 years ago, we were 10 years behind on fan engagement. From a technical social media aspect, we had no idea about Facebook.
Behind the US, yeah.
Yeah, miles behind. I used to watch what was happening in the States, go, that makes really a lot of sense. The use of hashtags and following a game rather than a person and following a conversation and just the use of Facebook with videos and content and interviews and fan-led information, whereas the AFL is now caught up on that. I think they've started to address some of the issues with the changing of the rules as well, but they just lost me for a long time there with all of that.
Do you find that the media coverage of the sport is different too? I mean, here in Australia, I find that it's because we've got an enormous amount of journalists to cover a relatively small area. They're just bottom feeding a lot of the time to try and sell newspapers. And there's a lot of negative kind of stories that appear in the press. Is it similar over there, or do they have more narrative in their media? Do they have more opportunity to talk and discuss and, you know, I mean, maybe I'm being a little bit cruel to some of our stations.
My
but
personal opinion is that they have just they have more journalists, I would have thought, and the focus is more intense. You go to San Francisco, there's Oakland's there, and the other side of the bay, people are mad passionate about the A's as well. But you've got a city of 4 million people just supporting one team, and there is a swag of journalists just the same. And they do have the negative stories, but you're right, they probably, the things that take hold in the market, it seems to be the more positive and genuine stories shine out. Sometimes I think maybe the Australian market falls for the media three-card trick a little bit too often, and it self-generates into that. We just got to keep muckraking because that's what sells papers.
Yeah.
I think in the US they kind of, They might have moved me up.
Because we do have it's a tactic that people can see. Yeah? They'll ring up people. They'll have an explosive story. They'll ring people up. They'll even fuel the story so they can then have it headline their news. And I mean, I'm not sure that's good for the fans.
Perfect example to show you is this time last year after the Super Bowl, or just a month after the Super Bowl last year, Colin Kaepernick, who's the quarterback for the Niners, who was embroiled in a rape controversy. And for a good 6 weeks, everyone was pointing their fingers going, this guy's bad, you've got to sack him. And then the 911 tapes came out. And it was really different. The actual, what had happened was there were three players in a room drinking together and they had a girl present herself at their door, force her way into the room, and they rang and said, there's a girl in our room, we can't get rid of her. They rang security, they rang 911, and they made multiple phone calls. Once all the phone calls came out, the case got dismissed straight away. But beforehand, the speculation and the negative speculation was massive. So I don't think, looking at that instance, I look at it and think, Australia's nowhere near as bad as that in some regards.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So sometimes maybe we look over the fence and think the grass is greener, but
yeah,
it's probably just as brown on both sides.
So given your experience over there, what are the three things that we could do from a sports club's point of view to try and engender that sense of belonging and passion for the club, and I'm talking even at a grassroots level here, you know.
The thing that stuck with me the most is the Giants' involvement in the community.
Right.
And it's not lip service. It's a genuine community involvement. And I think that's the most important thing. The World Series, you've seen the AFL pre-match entertainment. It's horrible. It's farcical every year. It's disconnected from their sport. They try and do something with pop. They try and do something with rock. They'll try and do something with meatloaf. I don't know what you classify him as, but nothing works because it's completely disconnected from their game. The Super Bowl works because it's a pop-orientated, mass-produced sport. I don't think we could ever do that with the AFL. What I see with the baseball and the thing that I learnt from the World Series is the pre-match entertainment is zero. There's a first pitch, there's someone yelling out play ball, and they sing the national anthem.
And that's it?
That's it. The entertainment is the game. It's a pretty simple concept. The game is good enough that people will come to watch the game. They're not there to watch the entertainment. Okay? All their pre-match and everything was focused around their community.
So what do you mean by that? So what did they from the community in? Or
yeah, so game five, Robin Williams' kids threw out the first pitch.
Okay.
Robin Williams was a massive Giants fan. He was a fanatical San Francisco person and lived in the city. And they felt, when he died this year, they felt the city really grieves for him. So they had footage of him yelling play ball in the 2010 World Series. And then they had his son pitching the first pitch. And then as they ran out, the third baseman actually wrote, "Rest in peace, Robin."
Wow.
In the dirt. They are connected intrinsically to the people within their own community. The gentleman that took the catch to put over the fence, so we hit a home run to go into the World Series off Travis Ishikawa. The ball lands in the bleachers and it's caught out in the right field by a long-term regular season seats holder, like season ticket holder. The ball would be worth hundreds of thousands of dollars. Without flinching, he takes the ball down to the clubhouse and gives it back to the player. Without flinching. The Giants gave him the opportunity to throw out the first pitch in the first game of the World Series at San Francisco, game three. He had home plate tickets for the entire three games. And I think they gave him clubroom access as well.
Wow.
So they looked after him. But he, as that figure in the community, he was put up as the first person and the most important person to throw out that first pitch.
And he understood the value of that. So he then gave it back to the club, which shows his connection to it. So, I mean, that's a really, really powerful thing that you're telling us here.
They reinvest in it all the time. And it's because they believe in the community. It's not because it's lip service and this is what we need to do.
Well,
it's
because they
believe it.
And they see themselves as part of the community. Yeah. And I think for a lot of grassroots sports clubs out there, that is a really, really important takeaway lesson from this and from listening to you is to see yourself as part of the community that you live in, a mirror of the community that you live in and belong to that community. I think that's a really, really powerful message. And it's happening by one of the most world famous sports franchises that exist on the planet.
Yeah.
They do it themselves.
So, like, I could think of about eight different examples of that community connection. Gaylord Perry, who's a Hall of Famer for the Giants, his son Steve Perry was the lead singer of Journey, you know, Don't Stop Believing, that song, and Lights, which they always play at Giants games. He gets up in the crowd and just mimes the words from the stand and the entire crowd joins in. There is that real sense of belonging. I had a great conversation with a lady who sells the water out the front of the stadium. It's a 60-year-old African-American lady who and I had four or five conversations with her over the week. Her name was Gwendolyn, and she just sold water. That was her way of getting by to games. When people came to the games, she would sell the water and it would get her a bit of extra cash. Her husband was a policeman who died in the line of duty, so the local policeman looked after her and made sure that she got access to different halfway houses. She had mental health issues. She was a cocaine addict, but heart of gold, a little bit skittish and unpredictable. But the conversation I had with her, they were all fantastic. And I said to her at one point, what is it that connects the Giants to the community? And she swore at me and she walked off. She goes, I can't answer that question. And she said, but I'll show you. And she walked out into the street and people were streaming into the stadium and it's hot as buggery. So I was sitting there with a bottle of water just watching her and she's just screaming at everyone that walks past. Come on, Giants. High-fiving. Let's go, Giants. Starting chants up and she's high-fiving everyone and she comes back to me and she just said, you know, Martin Luther King had a really important presence in this city and baseball is where we all started to get along. She goes, that's all it's about. It doesn't matter if we win or lose. It's just that we all get along. And the history of the Giants with Willie Mays and all the great Hispanic players as well, that's embroiled in that community. They've done it for so long. They've lived it for so long. People support it. And I think from a local club perspective, that always rings true. I've seen it in my own local clubs. When you're consistent within your community and you do the right thing by people, people will come back and support you. long-term passion, commitment, and belief. But I think 99% of local sporting clubs in Australia do that already. We lose a little bit of track at the top level.
Wow. All right, mate. On that note, I'd like to say a big thanks to you. It was an incredible story that you related to us today. And I think there's a lot of lessons that we can take out of it. I wish you all the best in your journey to put that into book form. And I can't wait to read it. I honestly can't wait to read it. So thanks for coming in to Sports Community Radio.
Thanks, Joe.
And look forward to catching up with you when we have the world release of the book not too far away. Thanks, Beautiful. Mick Diveston.
Thanks, mate.
You're listening to Sports Community Radio with your hosts, Steve Pellis and Joe Novella, another Sports Community digital production, courtesy of www.sportscommunity.com.au. Okay, we've come to that time of the show again, unfortunately, when we have to say goodbye. You've been listening to us, Sports Community Radio, here from the studios of RPPFM 98.7, 98.3 on your dial, the voice of the peninsula. You can follow us from our website, www.sportscommunity.com.au, where you can get our latest podcasts if you've missed a few episodes, and a whole lot of other great information, including the latest in grants and resources such as how to develop your sponsorship packages and run your annual general meetings, for example. Okay, so we hope you've enjoyed the show. From myself, Joe Novella.
And myself, Steve Pellis. Thank you for making us part of your sports community.